As far as I'm concerned, there is only one true action hero. His name is Chev Chelios. He's cooler than Terminator, quicker than Jason Bourne, a more passionate lover than James Bond, and stronger than the Incredible Hulk. We saw Crank 1 and 2, and you know what that means. Now it's time for
of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, joined by Jason Mantzoukas.
How are you, Paul?
Very good. June is not here today, but we are going to do the show without her because we have a very special guest. One of our favorite movies that we've ever talked about on the podcast was Crank 2.
Absolutely.
Hands down. We have two types of movies on this show. How did this get made because it's bad, and how did this get made because it's fucking crazy and awesome. And so this definitely falls in the latter category. This is one of my favorite movies. I count Crank 1 and 2 as almost one movie because they fit together pretty great. And we have the co-writer, co-director of the movie, Brian Taylor, here today to talk to us a little bit about Crank 1 and 2. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, sir.
Have you ever thought about marrying the two movies together?
Like
The Godfather 1 and 2, and when he edited them together, so it's just like one enormous long movie?
Like Kill Bill.
Do it.
Yeah.
I'm imploring you to do that.
I really do think that's going to happen. Well, there was one idea for a while of like, let's cut them together into one, because both those movies, they're like 62 minutes each or something. So you could cut out like the boring parts where nothing happens. It's just people talking.
And I do want to see what happens in the 3 months, though, that Chev is in. Because Chev, essentially for 3 months in between 1 and 2, is having organ trouble, I guess.
That is funny that it's only 3 months.
Yeah. People change in those 3 months, too.
I would love for Crank 3 to just be those 3 months. And it's just Chev Chelios chilling out. Right. It's not an action movie at all. It's a romantic comedy.
Crank 1.5.
Yeah.
Statham could make sitting, you know, in a bed in a coma seem like an action scene. He has that ability.
He's the best. I want to read you this one comment that we got. This is kind of how I feel about, you guys as directors. This is a comment that was written on YouTube. It was actually up about Ghost Rider. It goes, "This film is made by the directors of Crank. These guys could film a documentary about an old lady walking around a garden center, and it would still be the most entertaining, fucked up thing you've ever seen in your life. I am in for whatever they do."
Well, that blows Crank 3 right there. It was going to be an old lady walking around a garden center.
But just by Ling.
No, so
I'll also take Crank 3 as just a by Ling movie.
I didn't see her rehab thing, her celebrity rehab. Did you see that?
Yeah, she was on Howard Stern talking about it.
Yeah.
And was bananas.
Yeah, I was on Loveline with Dr. Drew, and he said that she is, she's pretty bananas.
People were describing, you know, some of the crazy things that happened on her rehab thing, and I was like, that just sounds like a normal day on set.
Well, now, she said, I read one interview that she wrote all of her own dialogue, or is that her making that up, or is that...
That's really funny, actually, because, okay, so her character was supposed to be, the idea of her character was she came, you know, right out of, like, a shipping container.
Right.
Basically, and then put to work on the streets. And so her dialogue was written as sort of like these... semi-coherent, strange variations on American slang.
Right.
So she would say shit wrong.
Yeah.
Like on purpose, but in funny ways. That was the character. Then she got a hold of the script, and she took that stuff that was already wrong and then made it wronger, like bilingified it. And I don't know if that was by design or just because that's how she read it or that's how her brain just like parses stuff and processes stuff.
That she's like Daniel Day-Lewis in that way. She really has to put her stamp on something. She really gets into it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so she came up and she, you know, started... We didn't do any rehearsals with Biling.
Wait, you didn't?
No, you just
I was under the assumption that you guys did like a month of rehearsal for every one of these movies.
Yeah, she was in a hotel room working on that.
We workshopped Crank 2 extensively. It was like Blue Valentine, you know? We just all got together in a house.
You lived in it. Lived in it.
We had to become those characters. So then she comes in, and the first day, it was like action, and she starts spewing this shiny lunchbox and just all this stuff. We were like, wow. Okay. We don't understand what that means.
Yeah.
And we just kind of had a quick director's powwow on the set. It was just kind of like, okay, we can go two ways with this. We can either force her to say it like it is in the script, which are like little jokes and stuff that we wrote, or we can just go with it. And it was just like, yeah, let's just go with it.
Because it is one of the most amazing performances. I mean, she's speaking English and she's subtitled, which, by the way,
that was also a decision on set. It was like, look, it's fine. We don't need to understand it. You know, we'll just subtitle everything.
That's awesome.
And we were talking about this before. The way that you guys use titles in these movies are amazing. Like the subtitles that
I was obsessed with in Crank 1, the scene in the elevator where where after Chef Chalice is taking the drugs and he's having a conversation with the Asian guy who is intermittently subtitled, and then there's a shot from the Asian guy's point of view in which Chef Chalice reads the guy's subtitles.
Yeah.
That was that blew my mind.
That was like breaking the eighth wall.
It really was. I was like, this is phenomenal. The fact that he looks down and tries to make sense of the guy's subtitles, I was like, this is fucking awesome.
Well, you know, the funny thing about the subtitles in the first Crank movie for all the Asian characters, first of all, we use Asians completely interchangeably, you know, so it's like, quote, Asian gang, unquote. So they'll be like, you know, Korean guys, Japanese guys, Chinese guys. And we told them all, just speak your native language, say whatever you want, and we're just going to subtitle it to whatever we want.
Right.
So even though, movies did really well. Like, Crank did really well in Asia. You know, people loved it there. But we kept getting, like, emails of, like, you know, we love the movie, but why do the people not saying what they're saying?
Wait, do you have any idea what they are saying?
No.
That would be an amazing, like, Easter egg for these movies, is for people to go in and translate all of the languages that are being, and, like, an actual subtitle, the guys. It's just, like, actually, I'll have a hot fudge sundae.
Yeah, they could be saying, and actually, there's we even took it a step farther in Crank 1 in the shirt factory, I think. There's a scene where we just phonetically subtitle what he says.
Yeah, it's great, like, because they even do that for Ephedrine, too. Like,
but this is just, he said something in, I think, the guy, the shirt fag guy, I'm pretty sure he was Korean.
Yeah, let's just say he's Asian.
Let's just say he's, let's say Korean. But so he shouted something out in Korean. We didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
So we just subtitled it phonetically. Like, just said what it was. We didn't even translate it.
I love
You just heard him say those words.
Yeah.
And you didn't know what they meant.
Now you're just writing them out.
And maybe you'll understand it if you read it.
I love that you even flip the perspective. It's a POV of the Asian guy in the elevator, and you see the subtitle backwards.
It's so
great. And and he's like, "What do you think? I have cunt written on my forehead?" And then he just has cunt written on his forehead. It's great.
Is stuff like that, when you do stuff like that, a decision you're making afterwards, or is that in the script? Like, is that idea of, "What do you think? I have cunt written on my forehead?" Is it in the script that then you see him have it, or do you guys just kind of figure stuff like that out as you're going?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, no. Yeah. I cunt on the forehead was not in the script.
That's a Statham Improv line, or
no. The line was in the script, but actually having it written on the guy's head.
Yeah,
that was actually Brian Berdan came up with that, the editor. You know, we came in one day and he's like, "What if we actually write cunt on the forehead?" And we were just like, "Yeah."
The editing of the movies are so interesting and cool. Like, I mean, even like the choices at the end of Crank 1, where they have that KTLA news reporter, and he's just staring blank faced at one point in the middle of the fight.
That's a real KTLA guy too.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah,
he's awesome. We brought him back in 2.
Wait, who's he playing too?
The reporter, it's the same reporter.
Oh man, I just remember Q in 2, the behind the desk who's cursing during the thing.
Yeah.
Not Q, his name is John DeLancey.
John DeLancey is
great,
fantastic
actor.
We used him in Pathology too.
John DeLancey is an awesome actor.
He's so cool.
So good. Now, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. But overall, when you set out to make Crank, because you guys had not directed anything before that, right?
Correct, just commercials.
So did the idea of making it this insane come first, or is it like, let's just make an action movie? Like, was it always to be like, let's fucking blow it out?
Yes, yeah. I mean, it was like a cry for attention more than a movie, really.
How long did it take to shoot the first one?
Those movies are so fast. It's like 30 days, both of them.
That's amazing. Yeah, and it just seems like, and even in Crank 1, it seems like he's holding a camera at himself in one
there
scene
is,
running, and then passes it off to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, you get shots that don't look like I've seen anything else.
Well, that's the thing. And you guys are, like, famous for kind of the techniques that involve, like, prosumer cameras that you guys just destroy in getting shots, right?
Well, yeah. You know, in Crank 1, we used, like, early Sony HD cameras, which were gigantic, these big Betacam, like, ENG-looking things. And it was really hard, you know, because Mark does the stuff on the rollerblades where he skates around with a camera. Yeah. And we used to do that on DV all the time, shooting guys in extreme motorcycle videos and things like that.
Is that your background, doing stuff like that?
We don't really have a background. Okay. That's just one thing we did.
But you do have the best credit of all time, which is you were the extreme
visual sequences creator. Is that the one you're talking
about? For Biker Boys. Extreme visual. Yeah, that's like, that's the best title.
We made that title up.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Because really what happened on Biker Boys is we got hired, we volunteered to shoot the movie. There's actually two motorcycle movies going on at the same time.
Right.
Biker Boys was going on, Joseph Kahn's movie, Torque, was going on at the same time.
Oh, yeah, Torque.
And so they were kind of in competition, and so there was some talk that maybe we could shoot the whole movie and just make it really insane, but the studio didn't go for it or whatever. But the director really liked us, so he wanted us there to do stuff. So we actually worked 20 or 30 days on that movie. We didn't really do anything. We would just stand around and smoke cigars in cowboy hats, and everybody got mad at us.
By the way, amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we got to watch the whole process. We actually learned a lot.
Yeah.
Just by being there and hanging out and not doing anything. And so when it came time for our credit, it was like, well, who are we actually? And so we came up with that credit, Extreme Visual Sequences Creators.
Now, when
it's phenomenal.
It sounds like the most badass credit of all time. It's like, whoa, shit, these guys are the serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't do anything. There are no extreme visual sequences in that movie, by the way, at all. But we met a lot of people in that movie.
Yeah.
We met some really cool people who ended up working with later.
Now, I'm under the impression that Jason Statham is like the action star, that he should be way bigger. Like, because he's kind of great in every sense. Like,
yeah,
and I feel like, these movies do this service for him. Like, he gets to do kind of everything. He's funny. He's a good action star. But now, how did you get him involved in this thing? Because it's definitely different than the movies he's doing. Like, he's doing Transporter and all that sort of stuff. A little bit more serious stuff, or action movies, I guess.
Yeah, when we first met with Jason, we weren't really convinced, and he wasn't really convinced because, I didn't. All
you
I knew
mean
him from
extreme visual stunts creators.
Yeah.
didn't sway him.
To be honest, my reservation about Statham was, this was our first movie, right?
Yeah,
and I associated Statham with the Guy Ritchie movies,
mm-hmm. right?
And so I kind of thought that's like Guy Ritchie's guy, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like we want to get our own guy.
Totally. You don't want to be like, you took this other guy's guy. Yeah.
Exactly. And especially since Guy's kind of in our same wheelhouse, you know,
yeah.
same type of thing. And so that was kind of my reserve. I was like, I love Jason, but it's like, maybe we got to find our own Jason, you know what
yeah.
I mean? So then we went and met with Jason, and we were like, we don't need to find our own Jason. We like the real Jason. He's awesome. And Jason's thing was, gosh, you know, I really like the script, but, he says, I don't really do comedy. I'm not really funny.
Yeah.
which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because he's terrifically funny.
Yeah. And we were like, well, you don't have to be funny. Just play it straight and let the situations be funny. Da 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 da. But actually, once you get to know him, he's hilarious, you know? And that's I don't think people really know that on talk shows and stuff. He doesn't really show it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's nervous or something. He doesn't really like those shows, I think.
Yeah.
And in movies, he's always playing this sort of real grim, stoic type of guy.
Yeah.
That's not Jason.
Really?
Like, Jason is, not only is he funny, he's really, one of the quickest, wittiest. He's so fucking funny. Like, really clever and funny. He's amazing.
Was that Cockney slang, all his kind of stuff, addition to it, or was that you guys?
Well, that was cool, yeah, because, in the first movie, it was written for an L.A. guy.
Okay.
It was never supposed to be,
a British guy.
A British guy at all. So when Jason came in, he was like, do you want me to do this American? And we were like, nah, just see your accent. No one will care. You know, LA's a melting pot. Just be Jason. You know, it's fine. So he did. But so in the second movie, it was great because now we had an opportunity to actually write stuff for him.
Yeah.
So all the Cockney stuff in the second movie was specifically done because, I knew it would be cool, Jason Statham.
Yeah, it's great. The Cockney slang stuff is awesome.
And when you guys are going, are you improvising at all, or when you have a script and it's locked, are you pretty much doing that as is?
We always try to get every line as written, but then we also do improv stuff.
Because there's
and
stuff
Jason
in here,
comes up with really cool
I was gonna
shit.
Say there's stuff in here that seems discovered and weird and surreal.
Yeah.
In two, yes. One as well. One has really weird stuff in it, but two is definitely even the biling stuff we're talking about, but 2 is bonkers crazy.
You'd, and be, like, you'd be surprised like how much of that is scripted.
I was going to ask. Like, yeah. In a way, I kind of want to read a script and be like, holy shit, this is unbelievable.
Well, you know, actually, you have a great website. It's really great. It's Neville Dean Taylor.
NevilleDeanTaylor.com.
And you can buy and you can buy the actual scripts online there. And I was reading on there last night.
The early scripts.
The early scripts.
That's the thing. If it's just selling the script, that'd be one thing, but... I thought it'd be real cool for people to read the early version of the script before all the shit that happens to it.
Yeah, well, now, because there was one thing you said it, the Crank 1 includes the hardware store scene,
mm-hmm.
which is only in the Japanese version of the movie. Yeah. What is the hardware store scene?
Well, as you can see on that post, that poster.
We have
actually,
an amazing German poster in here.
Yeah, yeah. So the hardware scene is, it's after he's been shot in the ass.
Right.
Which, you watch the movie, he gets shot in the ass, and we never really talk about that anymore.
Like, yeah, I was going to ask about that, because he gets shot in the ass in the shirt factory. In the factory, and then it just the rest of the movie happens, and he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. So, but originally what happens is they kill the guys, and then they're driving along, and his leg is basically dead. Like, his one leg is just dying. It's, like, turns gray. And he's with Eve in the car, and he pulls up, and he sees a hardware store, and he's like, all right, just wait here in the car. I got to pull over. And he stops, and he runs across the street, and he goes in the hardware store, and she's waiting in the car.
Right.
And she kind of gets a little creeped out and everything, and finally she's like, I got to go check on him. And she walks in, and he's hammering, like, big nails into his leg.
Oh.
And we shot the whole thing. And the... The special effect was, like, kind of bad because it was just, like, a fake leg, and we had to find a certain angle, and he's hammering, and it kind of looked kind of stupid.
To what effect? Just to get the
just
leg?
Just to wake him up.
Just wake him up.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to...
Oh, my God.
So, like, these are the scripts that you couldn't really shoot there. Like, you couldn't shoot the original
version. That one wasn't in because we just shot it, like, really bad. It looked really stupid. But we needed extra length for the Japanese version contractually, so we're like, let's put the nail scene in. Yeah.
Are there other scenes that are lost to time like that?
Not really. The thing is, like, we shoot so fast on these movies, we really don't have too much that doesn't end up on screen. On Crank 2, I mean, everything ended up on screen.
Crank 2, I mean, I was saying to Jason before he came in, like, Crank 1 is awesome, but when you know that there's a Crank 2, it's like, oh, you just heightened it so amazing. I mean, the final image of that movie... of Chev on fire giving the finger to the audience while, like, I'm going to keep on loving you plays is the best ending of all time. It's amazing. You can't even top it. Although, all I want to do is see, like, a Crank 3. I mean, I want these
The Crank 1 ending was pretty good, too.
The Crank 1 ending is amazing,
you know,
too.
Like, Crank 1, the whole movie was reverse engineered from the ending.
Just him falling out of the helicopter.
Yeah, I got a guy falling out of the helicopter. He makes a cell phone call. He lands. His face comes right into the camera looking at us, and that's the end of the movie. Okay, so now we got to, like, figure out the movie that leads to that.
Man, and there is, if you have not seen it, you have to see this movie, Crank 1. He makes a 45-second to a minute-long phone call to his girlfriend as he is falling, like, thousands of feet from the sky, and he's so calm and he's so relaxed. It's an amazing scene.
And did you enjoy, as a true fan, the shout back to that phone call in the second movie?
Wait, where was the shout? Where?
Well, they're in the police car.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And he says, "Didn't you get my call?" And then it cuts to that shot of the answering machine, and you just hear.
Forgot all about that.
She's like, "No, of course not."
Now wait, now that helicopter shot, obviously you do like. You do crazy, shots, and you don't use CGI and stuff. Or if I can't tell, I mean, obviously the fire and stuff. But the helicopter shot—that's real, right? Were you guys in a real helicopter?
The one where he's hanging out,
of
the side and fighting is absolutely real.
Yeah,
And that was him. He's on one cable. He had his feet on the skids. Mark was in there with him with the camera holding it up over his head.
Holy shit.
And
how do you talk somebody into that? Like, do you have to talk your actors into doing crazy? Because, I mean, it seems less protective than, like, a big Hollywood movie.
Well, we're always like, well, we'll do it. Why won't you do it?
Okay.
You know? And they're like, oh, okay.
So peer pressure.
But, yeah, I mean,
you're saying peer pressure.
It's total peer pressure. But Jason's really good with stuff like that. Like, he's super smart about that. And he's got a lot of action sort of experience. Yeah. So he'll come in, and what he does is he wants to know absolutely everything about it.
Okay.
You know, so he'll talk to the guys who are rigging it. He'll talk to the coordinator and say, like, okay, what's this? What's this? Where does this go? Where does this go? Where does this go? And then once he has that all in his head and he trusts it,
Yeah.
Then he can just let go. And you see on that helicopter thing, like literally he's got one foot on and he's just going for it.
It's amazing. It's one like of the coolest shots.
It's a really visceral shot. Like I noticed it too, because I was like, that's real. This is not a CG moment right now.
And you don't see it, and you don't see kind of scenes like
they're
that
high
anymore.
Up.
They're really high up over LA. And again, like, I think in a way, like, was that expensive to do, or you just got a helicopter and you shot in the helicopter? That's awesome. I love that. I love it. Now, we had a couple of people were asking about things here. Artoon really wanted to know about the Godzilla-style fight scene in Crank 2. One of the best fight scenes. He gets thrown into like an electrical electrical box, and then it becomes a full-on Godzilla scene, like rubber heads, just huge. It's
giant. Like,
did you catch the Lloyd Kaufman cameo?
No.
Wait, is he one of the
he's one of the maintenance guys who's watching.
I didn't realize that was Lloyd Kaufman. Yeah. That's amazing. So,
so we had to make the little clay Lloyd Kaufman.
The cutting back to like the clay guys is looking frozen watching this Godzilla fight. And that's how you know Crank 2 is like, oh, Crank 1, we're going to go way above that. Yeah. Like that Godzilla fight scene happens like in the first like 5 minutes of Crank 2. Like it's like, and it keeps on getting crazier. Like, so I guess the question that they had was, were you Godzilla fans or, you know, how did you, or were you just like, sure, why the hell not make them have a Godzilla fight?
Yeah, the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, when you guys are doing Crank 2 or you're like, let's do this, are you just like, what's the craziest thing that could happen now? This. What about, like, is it just an exercise in heightening? Because it feels like, and that's why I say, like, if you put them together, like, I genuinely feel like you would, Crank 2 picks up at the crazy height of Crank 1 and just heightens.
Yeah, it just goes. That's why they feel like they really fit together, because it ran, like, the end of Crank 1 is, like, crazier and crazier and crazier, and then Crank 2 is like, all right, bye-bye, we're gone. Yeah. It's like,
Were you guys at all tempted to bring back girls in fishbowls for Crank 2?
Yeah, I love the girls in fishbowls.
Girls in fishbowls.
I was like, I need to know everything about girls in fishbowls. In that script, was it just like, the guys are sitting on a sofa surrounded by men and guns and girls in bikinis and fishbowls?
Yeah. Well, because like, that was supposed to be, a lot of people think that the hotel in Crank 1 is the standard.
Right. It looks like that, yeah.
It looks like the standard. It's actually the building next to the standard.
Oh, okay.
And it's like a parody of the standard. It's called the Lint. I don't know why the Lint, because it's supposed to be so insignificant, you know, but... So that was like it's supposed to be the ultimate parody of like a superficial LA, like ridiculous hotel. And, you know, in the standard in Hollywood, they have those girls that are in like fish tanks.
Yeah, they have, like right when you check in, there's like a girl lying down and
Yeah, so it was just kind of like an extension of that. You know, wouldn't it be cool if these girls were lounging around in these like little like, you know, plastic balls, and then when the shootout breaks out, they're trapped.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Can't get out.
It's amazing.
That was one of the moments where I had to rewind and go, wait, what are they in the balls?
The girl screaming and getting caught in the gunfire is one of my favorite things ever. It's so good. And
it's great.
Then the really funny thing is casting for that.
Yeah.
Because we put out a, like, I wish I still had it, but Bill Clark, our AD, who's brilliant. He does all Quentin stuff as well.
Yeah.
He's a maniac. He really got into that. He thought that would be so funny. And he put it, I was like, how are we going to get girls to do this? Because it's not going to be comfortable. He says, well, let's see. And he wrote a little ad put out in the trades.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of ad you don't think like anybody would ever answer. It's like, wanted a girl to be naked in a very claustrophobic, tight-fitting plastic ball for a long period of time. Without food or water or something like that.
Oh my God.
And within like 40 minutes, we had 100 responses. I was like, yep, there you go. That's the proof that the satire is not really a satire.
Welcome to the saddest place on earth, Hollywood, California.
Dreams are dying every day. Now, the first Crank movie, do you get it made right away? Like, you have this script, like, what was there anybody going, well, you can't do this, or any, like, what? Any
options? No, that was really, when we were trying to get our start, that script was sort of our calling card, and it went all over town, and we took meetings with all the studios, and every single studio said, like, wow, you know, we really love this, we wish we could make this movie, we could never make this movie,
right?
But we love it, you know, and this Chinatown scene, it's so funny, but of course, you know, that scene will never be in the movie.
You're talking about the Chinatown sex scene.
Yeah. The love scene.
Okay.
The love scene.
The scene where Chev Chelios makes love to Amy Smart against a newspaper.
Yes.
While
making eye contact with a bus full of
Asian teenagers.
Asian teenagers.
Which is
teenagers is generous.
Which is nothing compared to in the sequel when they have sex in a racetrack, and when she climaxes, there is a close up shot of a horse's dick.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that which is pretty funny.
Amazing.
That's a CG horse dick.
Is it? Okay.
Well, yeah, actually, horse races are all female.
Oh,
by the
way.
So that's actually a little logic problem in the movie. We don't really pay
attention
to
no,
like
that. That was a real logic problem for
it
me when
me
I was
out of
watching it.
I know. It took you out, right?
I can't watch this anymore. I'm turning it off.
So here's some more trivia, right, for true fans. Okay, so in Crank 1 in the Chinatown scene, and if you watch the DVD extras, there's this one guy. He's like the king extra. Uh-huh. He's the guy who gets up in the morning and he's like, all right, I'm gonna fucking make my mark on this movie. And it was this one Asian dude with a red t-shirt. Uh-huh. And he's in about six different shots in that scene. Like every time you see him running into the background, he's clowning around. He's like, he's really hamming it up. And he made it into the final cut in like five shots. And on the DVD extras for Crank 1, we point him out. Like, look at this guy. Here he is again. Here he is again. You know, wow. You know, this guy's like a hero for extras.
That's amazing.
So in Crank 2, in the racetrack scene, we wanted to get that same guy.
Yeah.
And put him in that scene. And we tried so hard to track him down. We found the guy's name. Eventually, we found he was a college student back east and everything. We were like, look, we'll fly you out to be in the scene. And he never got back to us. Like, he totally flaked.
Oh.
So, you know, in the true kind of like completely racist tradition of Crank movies, we just got another guy who kind of looked like him. And we put him in the same red shirt.
Is that the guy with the underwear?
That's the guy who catches the underwear. It's supposed to be the same extra. Like, how obscure is that? And he's also the guy who, in the news broadcast, when the old lady's saying, like, he treated me like his hot little whore. You know, he's the guy in the background with the panties and everything.
I love that there's
it's
so
like
many
extras continuity between the two movies.
I love that you guys make those connections between the two movies, too. Like the guy from It's Always Sunny.
Oh, Glenn Howerton.
Who
is now in therapy in the second movie and then eventually gets killed. But in the first movie, he was one of the EMT workers that Chev is trying to
kill. Same guy.
Yeah, same guy. Yeah.
Same character. Yeah, so that was funny because Glenn's been a friend of ours for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite actors.
He's the best.
He's amazing.
He's so good.
Yeah.
And we were just sitting around, you know, hanging out, drunk, basically.
Yeah.
And it was like, wouldn't it be funny if we brought you back in the next movie?
Wow.
And you're like in therapy. And the whole scene, you know, you're in therapy and all this stuff. And then like you say, this is the first day of the rest of my life. And you get up and then a bullet hits you. And we were just laughing about it. And he's like, it's pretty funny. I'm like, all right, that's going to happen. And he's like, no. He absolutely didn't believe that it was really going to happen. Yeah. And then he gets the script like a month later with that scene in it.
And that's an amazing scene, too, because...
I love that scene.
That scene, the therapist is played by... Oh, I'm forgetting her name
Lauren Holly.
Lauren Holly.
Yeah.
And it just starts off as, like, a normal therapist scene, and then it heightens as, like, overly sexualized. Yeah. And it's like, you know what you need? Yeah. You need to get your face in some snatch. You need to fuck a whore. And it's like, whoa. It's like, there's never a dumb...
Glenn's like, he's so good,
It's a
so
great,
funny.
It's such a great scene. Now, I would be remiss if we did not talk about this thing. We talked about this on the original podcast about Crank 2, and this actually brought us all together here. In the credits, there's like bloopers in the closing credits of Crank 2. And I've always been obsessed with a guy running by a frame in a Wright's Patty hat, and it looks like he'd shit his pants.
Yeah.
And I got a tweet from you that said, dude, even better, it's a blood stain, not a shit stain.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, what the fuck happened there?
Well, okay, so this is an example of those things where, that's a scripted moment. Like, in the script, it says, an underage Asian boy wearing tighty whities with a blood stain in the ass comes running out.
Why?
Because.
No, that's not a good enough answer, Brian. I'm gonna tell you, man. That's not a good enough answer.
I mean, you love that, right? I mean, you love it, right?
I love it.
Okay,
so
that's why.
Yeah. All right.
That's why. And then, so, you know, it's in the script.
Every movie.
It's in the script. So we shot it. And then we just weren't quite satisfied with, because, like, you couldn't really tell it was a blood stain, and he was, like, mortified, this poor kid. And you can hear on the bloopers Bill Clark screaming at him, run, Lance, come on!
Oh, God.
So But that's what it is. It's actually a blood stain, and it was scripted as a dramatic moment.
Okay, so this wasn't a guy who got caught bleeding on the set then.
And the rice paddy hats too. That was scripted as well.
Of course, yeah. The rice paddy hats are. I love the rice paddy.
Wait. No. You know, I could be wrong about that being scripted, because I remember we found that location, and there was that side of the house that we called like Chuck Norris Alley or something.
Right. So,
like randomly, it looked like a Southeast Asia jungle. They're like, this is it's so amazing that this is next to this location. It's like so perfect. And I think we actually ordered up hats from the
like a prop department.
Yeah, like, wouldn't it be great if?
Oh my god.
And then we didn't use that either because, like, you know, we were going to have the arms and legs flying out the windows, and it was so lame. Oh. We were like, well,
their head comes out the window in that fight scene. A head flies out the front window.
Yeah.
Which is so great. You don't see what's the chef goes into this house, this Asian whorehouse, and there's a huge fight. People are flying out the windows, and just one head just flies out. It's a great scene. But and my other favorite scene in Crank 2 outdoes Raiders of the Lost Ark by 1,000,000%, which is, you know, the face melting scene in Raiders. You do it with boobs. Some girl gets shot in the boobs, and the boobs melt in the. She gets a boob shot.
Because those are implants.
Of course, she got her implants
shot out. That was supposed to be in Crank 1. That was a gag in the script of Crank 1. It was going to happen on the roof shootout at the end.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it was like the girls in the bowls?
It was like, burn, Hollywood, burn, man. We're going to take all of the, you know, L.A. stuff and just completely just fuck it up. Ugh. And so we had the whole thing of the implants getting shot out. I thought it was like the greatest moment ever, but we couldn't pull it off special effects-wise. It was just, we didn't have the money. They couldn't do it right. And then on Crank 2, we were working with Christian Tinsley, who's a genius. He did all the gore effects for Passion of the Christ.
Oh wow! Oh yeah, those are intense.
Incredibly gory.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's really intense.
And he's phenomenal. He did. If you want to
jerk off to gore, Passion of the Christ is a really good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
You always judge movies by how you can jerk off to the gore.
Yeah, just like how gory is the jerk off material.
Like, it's like Hostile with Jesus. I love that movie.
I remember seeing it in the theater and being like, holy, it's.
Well, what I remember is I saw it in the theater as well, and there were all these people that had brought like children to it.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, it's like a Christian movie. Yeah.
And they were all crying, and it's like, yeah, they're having this religious moment. No, they're not.
This is just brutal.
Yeah. Well, it's good though. But anyway, so we had the man on this one, and we were like, okay, this is where we get to do our shooting out the tits gang. And a friend of ours, Annie Girard, who's hilarious, you know, we had her come in and do it, and she was walking around all day with these gigantic, you know, boobs that look completely real. And
that's great.
It's a good moment.
You kind of surround yourselves, and
that was one of those. Oh no, they didn't.
Yeah, when we saw this.
There's a lot of that in these movies. I'm like, what? Come on!
I actually went to the midnight screening of Crank 2 in the theater, and we had like a group of like 30 people. We were in like somewhere in Glendale, I think. We got in trouble with Harry Knowles, as a matter of fact. So we did a thing called Twit Flicks. We tried to get as many people as we could around the country to go see the midnight screening of Crank 2 and just tweet about how awesome it was. And Harry Knowles then yelled at us. He was like, "How could you're wrecking the sanctity of cinema?" And then I had to apologize to Harry Knowles.
Really? Why? Yeah. Why is that a problem?
I guess
people were on their phones.
I guess he didn't like
that. We were tweeting during the movie?
Yeah.
What we had said was we were all going to be in the back row if you were going to do it, and you could just share your experiences with people as the movie was going on. Just like and we had like this crazy group of people that were like chiming in, like from all over the country at their midnight screenings, watching.
Well, let me officially say, you know, that's okay. I like that.
We will do it for Ghost Rider.
Yeah,
yeah, that's totally cool. That's acceptable with me. So, you
know. We paid for our tickets and we were in the back, not disturbing the people that were there. Now, all right, there's other questions I want to ask you. I don't know these people, but we talked about Bai Ling. It seems to me that you surrounded yourself with some crazy elements, like Corey Haim. Bidling.
How good is Corey in the movie?
Corey is
really
great.
Good.
Yeah. So what? Was that somebody that you went after? Did he come to you? Like,
oh, we went after him. Yeah.
And he's like, he was kind of like cagey, right? He wasn't like, I remember reading that he was. I never didn't want to work or.
No.
Nah, like,
well, he had a lot of problems.
Yeah.
you know, which I won't go into, other than to say, you know, Robert Downey Jr. never had these problems. I mean, like, you know.
One of the most disturbing things, like they had that Corey and Corey show, like that he kept a mic on for like the Lost Boys remake, and it was the most upsetting thing because you're just like listening to what's going on inside his trailer, and it's bad news.
Yeah. So, you know, Corey had issues, but, I grew up watching Corey Haim movies. I love that guy.
And,
we thought how cool to bring him back and have him do it. So at the point when we got him, I think this was pretty much his last movie.
Yeah.
And he was a different guy, you know? He was so humble.
Oh, wow.
And so sweet, really.
Yeah.
And he was so excited to do it, you know? And it was actually amazing. He would literally show up. He wanted to rehearse. He wanted to show. He was the first guy there. He would. You know, he would be his own stand-in. He's like, I don't need a stand-in. You can just use me. And I mean, he was like...
Because he's not phoning it in. He doesn't look like he has any problems. Like, he's doing it. Like,
he was fantastic. Now, he couldn't really remember two lines in a row. So we had to do a lot of takes. But the takes that we got were great. And he was awesome. You know,
that's awesome.
We really liked him.
And David Carradine, how was David Carradine? Because David Carradine...
Carradine's a boss, man.
Dude.
He's just like, he's just the man.
Carradine is doing crazy shit in this movie. Like, he is, you know, he's picking up a hooker on the street and making, like, just... I've never seen David Carradine like this. Now, how do you get David Carradine to, like... Yeah, he was totally into, like, doing, like, all the stuff about, like, eating out girls and stuff.
Here's the thing. I think we create, like, an atmosphere on our sets where it doesn't feel like we're making a movie.
Okay.
It's like, it just kind of feels like playing.
Yeah.
And every crew that works on one of our movies, they always call us from the next movie, and they're just like, fuck my life. When are you guys making a movie again? Because it's like, we have a way of, especially a crank movie, more than anything. It's really just like, you make a big sandbox, which is the script, and find the location where you can do it, where you can basically look 360 degrees and just play. And then it just becomes just having fun, and there's not a lot of yelling and screaming or pressure and everything. So everything feels really, really fun making a crank movie. It's almost like we should pay to do these movies. So guys like Statham and Amy Smart. I mean, look at the pimp hand we have with Amy Smart. I mean, she'll do anything, you know. And it's like, she'll show up and say, like, okay, I see in the script here I'm supposed to do this. I'm basically naked. I'm rolling around in horse manure. I don't think it's sanitary. Can we talk about this? And within 10 minutes, she's like, all right, fuck it. Let's just do it. Because it's just fine. You know, nobody's bumming out about anything.
And I know June, who is not here right now, she would say that she loves the love story between these two characters. I mean, if you really look at the movie, it is a love story.
It is.
It's all about him just trying to get to this girl at every step of the way, even the end when he's on fire. Seeing Bai Ling as Amy Smart, and he's kissing her, and then Bai Ling catches on fire, which is amazing.
That one shot where it comes back to reality and she's like flipping off in the distance with the smoke.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's my favorite.
It's amazing.
It's and the whole bodyguard stuff that runs through the whole movie too is so great. Like, she thinks that he's Kevin Costner, or she wants him.
Oh,
to
you
be
caught that?
Yeah.
This is why, by the way, I really wanted to come and do this, because I listened to that whole podcast you guys did about Crank 2, and it was really like satisfying and fun for me to hear, because it was like so many little goofy things went into that movie, and I have no idea if anybody ever saw that movie or really even got it. And so, like, you guys, like, you got everything in there, and it was just like, yes, somebody was paying attention to this.
That's all we do,
insane
pay attention
thing.
Well, it's one of the movies that, like, I feel like I talk to people, like, have you seen this movie? And you describe any element of it, people are like, what? It's in a movie?
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing, and
And you have no... And I also feel like you can explain it to people and really not even be able to explain, like, the kinetic energy that you guys are bringing. Like, the visual style of these movies is, like, next level insane.
Well, the thing about that movie, this is what I think about it, is, you know, something like what Quentin and Robert did is like a tribute to Grindhouse movies.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like this, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Especially Robert's.
Yeah, Robert's Planet Terror is...
It's really great. But what it is, it's like it's a campy, like, kind of satire loving tribute to those kind of movies. But this is not that. This actually is a Grindhouse movie.
It is. Oh, without a doubt.
It's not a tribute to a Grindhouse movie. Like, this is, you know, modern 2000 era Grindhouse.
Yeah.
And what that means to me is a movie made for no money that has to be so insane in order to, like, rise above the din and actually and also, get into 3,000 screens.
And what it seems to me is like you guys are using what, I mean, I'm going to call limitations, but from like a budgetary level as ways to innovate. You know what I mean? Like you guys are using, because you don't have a lot of money, you're taking cameras, you're destroying them, and you're getting crazy shots out of it. You're you're creating an atmosphere that is truly unique.
Well, so here's an example. So in the script on Crank 2, you know, he's driving in the police car and he runs into a train is going by and some train tracks and he can't get past that. And actually the front of the car is scraping against the train and he can't get past it. And then the cops come up behind him. And we literally could not afford that. We couldn't afford to get a train.
Right.
And any of that stuff. So it was like, okay, well, something's got to stop him. All we know is he's got to stop. We got to get him out of the car.
Yeah.
He's got to get out of the police car. Okay, so what if it's an actor's strike? Because it's L.A., so there's an actor's strike. So he runs into the strike. There's a bunch of people on the street. It'll be, you know, a lot of people, and it'll be kind of funny. But it didn't really seem that funny because, like, actor strikes are boring.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't want to have a bunch
of... Wait. Okay. All right. What if it's, like, a porn actor's strike?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're striking, but like, so that
they wanted higher wages. They were just striking. It was Ron Jeremy and Jenna Hayes. Yeah. It's a great. It's like
dropping loads all over your silly wages.
The fact that you had the dropping loads guy in there was amazing.
He says dropping loads all over your silly wages.
Oh my God.
Well, you know, speaking of that,
which should be the
tagline. So then we get, and then it was also an excuse to just hire a bunch of porn guys, which was funny.
Yeah.
And we wanted to get all these old school guys. You know, we tried to get Peter North. He wasn't available. We tried to get a lot of guys like that, and never tried to get Ron Jeremy.
Oh, really?
No, because Ron Jeremy was. We were just like, you know, Ron's in everything. It's kind of played out. It's Ron Jeremy. It's kind of like whatever. So let's get the other guys that you don't ever see. You know, let's get like Ed Powers. You know,
Mandingo.
Yeah, the dirty debutante's genius. You know, who came out with like 117 of those movies. Wait, 317 of those movies. And, you know, guys like that, you know, we wanted to get Max Hardcore, but he was in jail. Which is great. He was in Florida.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody was like, I tried to get Max Hardcore, but he was in jail.
Man, imagine being in jail with Max Hardcore. Like, that's another, that would be... Yeah, bunkmates of it.
Be honest, he's got the little bandana and the cowboy hat, and denim vest. Anyway, so we never hired Ron, but we set the scene. We were there, we were ready to go, and Ron Jeremy showed up.
Come on,
I swear to God,
he heard about it through the message boards,
and he came up and he's like, "Hey guys, you know, I know you probably meant to call me, and
that's amazing."
Yeah, I assume I'm supposed to be here, right? You know, I just didn't get it, and we're just like, yeah, sure, you know? Oh. Yeah, sure. So all of that shit that he says, that's all his dialogue is improvising, and he forced himself right to the front.
Oh, my God.
And
he's
he started
like that
doing...
Age, he's like that red-shirted extra.
Yeah. But all the stuff he was saying was, like, gold. Like, he was awesome. We were just like, Ron, okay, that's amazing. So he forced himself in it. He cast himself, wrote his own lines.
Right.
Directed himself.
And crushed.
And crushed. And he's in the movie, and now, like, we're really good friends.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. He's now, what is it like to go from, you know, you did Crank, then you made Gamer with Gerard Butler, and now you're doing Ghost Rider 2. You just finished Ghost Rider 2. What is it like going in that other direction now? Like, kind of like, because I guess that's more money, or is it not? Are you guys having a lot more money in that?
You would think it was more money. You mean Ghost Rider? Yeah,
Ghost Rider.
You would
think
it was more money, but we were out there in Eastern Europe for like 6 months, and really, there was no money.
Really?
It felt just like making a Crank movie.
Really?
Yeah.
And the same atmosphere and everything, so we brought the same crew and...
We couldn't bring all of our crew. We brought Brandon, who shot Crank 2.
Okay.
That was the one guy we could bring. And everybody else, it was all Euros and local Romanians and...
And were they in hiring you guys, I'm assuming, were they signing off on you guys kind of putting your stamp on that property?
Well, they wanted it to be... You know, the one mandate that we got from the beginning, and actually, it was on our end too. You know, we said like, this is a cool opportunity. It's a Marvel Comics movie for a big studio. Yeah, it'd be awesome to do it, but we don't want it to be anything like the first movie.
And Ghost Rider is, for those people who don't know, is like a character in the Marvel Universe who would lend himself to a grindhouse type of movie. It is a demon possessed, you know, motorcycle riding kind of vigilante.
Well, and it's Nick.
And it's Nick Cage.
First of all, we love Nick Cage.
We're obsessed with Nick Cage.
Yeah, because he makes, I mean, all over the gamut. Like, some of the best movies, some of the craziest movies, but they're always entertaining on some level.
Yeah. And some of the worst movies. Some truly amazingly bad movies.
Well, Nick, I mean, actually, I'm not kidding. Like, Nick was the prototype for Chev Chelios in a lot of ways.
Of course. Really?
Like, that was who we would have wanted to get, but he was out of our price range back then.
Amazing. And now, what is it like working with Nick Cage?
I mean really, imagine Crank with Nick.
I mean, it would be... that actually makes... You got to bring him in. If you've ever
Crank 3 needs him as a villain.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, obviously, Jason's
the greatest
guy. Should be
Chevy Chelsea's dad.
Jason's like a force of nature.
But Nick Cage
but
and
it
Crank.
Almost, you almost want to remake the movie with him to see how it would be.
You should do it like the way Gus Van Sant remade Psycho. You should
shot for shot.
Only by the same directors.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
We'll take it to another level.
Same script, same directors, just different actors.
All I want is for Crank 3 to just be, without any reference, Chev Chelios is Nick Cage and Bai Ling.
as Amy Smart's role.
As Amy Smart's role.
So not biling with, like, you know, third degree burns over 90% of the
I mean, you know I'll take that too.
Chev Chelios essentially becomes the ghostwriter at the end of number
two.
Yeah. He's on fire. Now, what is it like working with Nick Cage? Because, I mean, he's a force of nature. I mean, he's this guy, like, he's beyond, you know, I mean, he's this iconic kind of guy. Is he willing to be like, yeah, let's do it, let's work with you? Does he bring his own ideas?
Yeah. No, Nick is like, basically, if you're a fan of the whole Nick Cage thing,
yeah,
which I am,
yeah, me too,
same. We just watched Wicker Man.
All I can tell you about Nick, to sum it up, is he is everything you would hope that he would be. Like that's it. Like he's as good of a guy, as you would hope he would be.
Yeah.
He's as cool. He's as funny. He's as creative. He's as weird.
Yeah.
And he comes to play, right? He is like ready to act, and
the most professional guy. And then when it's rolling, it's just like madness, man.
Well, that's
he's
the thing.
So
is like
so great.
He seems like Hollywood's greatest maniac right now.
Yeah,
he really is. And we try to, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for that, like in a ghostwriter movie.
Yeah.
It got to the point where at the end of the movie, literally, we were doing a scene, and we were like, "Well, we want you to." Yeah, basically, you're just bugging out and going crazy here, but we're hoping we could get, like, some different thing that we haven't seen yet in the movie. And he's like, guys, I think I'm kind of running out of ways to be crazy. I've done all of them at this point. And so, well, let's just try this. And so he started trying something that was a completely different kind of flavor of Nick Cage crazy. And he's really creative, and it was so fun. We were definitely, like, fanboys. Like, you'd look at each other and say, like, that's Nick Cage.
That's great.
Now, someone wrote in, Sheldon Chu wrote in, he wants to know about the flaming hookers that never made it past the pitch phase in Ghost Rider 2. He said that he had done some research, you mentioned flaming hookers.
Yeah, we never pitched flaming hookers.
Never, all right.
That was a joke. That was a joke. No, but the idea was like, in this, anything that he rides turns into like a hell vehicle.
Okay. I was like, he's going to fuck a girl?
Yeah, so we're like, well, yeah.
Because that's going to happen in this PG-13 comic book movie.
Yeah, I mean, but that's more of like a Crank 3 gag.
Yeah.
And people, by the way,
I wonder if you could get away with Crank 3 of Chelios getting possessed by the same devil that possesses the Ghost Rider.
Would be amazing is like in the Ghost Rider comic, there is now a second Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And if you made Chev Chelios the second Ghost Rider,
This should be it. Ghost Rider 3 and Crank 3 together.
Yeah, it's like Jason versus Freddy or whatever.
Oh, if you can make that happen, I will fund it.
Now, are you now?
Wasn't there supposed to be a Jason versus Freddy versus Ash movie?
Yeah, yes. That would have been.
Whatever
great.
Happened to that?
I don't think. I think interest probably because I feel like people don't really know Ash that well. I mean, I know Ash.
I don't know. I feel like it's something that is still out there.
Remaking Evil Dead.
Yeah.
But
understand.
Don't understand that either. I will add, like, just about, like, what you guys are gravitate towards. I mean, do you only want to do things that you guys are writing, or would you be open to taking on projects that you're not writing?
Well, Ghost Rider was a script.
Oh, that wasn't your script?
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow. No. Okay.
I mean, we worked on the script.
Yeah.
But David Goyer wrote a Ghost Rider draft before even the first movie came out, like 10 years ago.
Oh wow!
And that's what this one's based on.
Well, sort of, because it's set in America, and it's a really hard R version. You could never make it today because of the climate today, as we talked about. But it's cool. Like, it's a really good script. And then over the course of 10 years, It got rewrites with different sets of writers, and all this weird stuff came into it. I mean, for a while it was like the Da Vinci Code, and then it was like it got really crazy. And so at the point when we got to it, it was a pretty dense script already. But yeah.
Everyone loves this trailer of Ghost Rider, and he also has Idris Elba, who is like my favorite, like
the best.
He does a show called Luther. That
if you like Idris now, wait till you see him in this movie. Me, this is like a breakout for him.
Oh,
and
I love that.
So cool.
And what everyone's talking about this trailer too is the final moment in the trailer, which is Nick Cage pissing fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which there you go. I mean, that's worth your price of admission right there. Before we wrap up,
he can really do that.
I don't
doubt
it. It's
not a special effect.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. But it's just because he has ingested a lot of toxins.
No, it's because he's a demon from hell.
I have...
He's 1,000 years old.
These are three questions that I'm going to ask you. Be quick questions here. And tell me if you take to any of these. This guy is obsessed with IMDb trivia. He says that your IMDb trivia is that you are a graduate of LA Film School. He says, that's boring. He's like, a wildly exciting creative filmmaking talent like yourself should have something juicier than that on his profile. What would a piece of trivia be about you? He goes, for example, Francis Ford Coppola lists that he caught polio when he was a child and he practiced puppetry during his quarantine. And Jason Statham's trivia is he's appeared in three different films in which he's been attacked with an axe. Transporter 1, 2, and War.
Yeah. I'll work on my IMDb trivia for him.
And then I guess what would be – is there a project that you would love to work on? Anything that you – like a property that you would like to get involved with, or could you talk about that?
Jeez, I don't know. Yeah, there's a million things.
Yeah.
There's a million things.
I mean, I could very easily see, like, Crank 3, Chev Chelios is revealed to be a Terminator. That would make sense to
me.
Well,
Crank 3, you know.
Is that going to happen? Is there ever going to be a Crank 3?
Well, there has to be.
Right?
The only question is when and how.
I heard one thing that you said, and I may be misquoting you, but it was the best thing I heard, which was that you're going to skip Crank 3 through 9 and just make Crank 10.
Yeah.
And like the assumption being that you kind of lost it, like Crank 3 through 9 were not that great, and Crank 10 is going to be where it's like
recapturing the magic.
I don't even know what that means. Yeah, we were going to actually, there was a lot of Crank things. Like one of the ideas is we were going to spin off some of the side characters into like really weird direct-to-video series. We were going to do Randy.
Oh,
but then Corey Haim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you should do it with the Dwight. Should do it with Dwight Yoakam, the doctor to the, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
In Crank 1, when, like...
And Efren actually would probably do a cool one.
Oh, that would be a great one.
Which one, though? Do you want him to play his brother or
there's a prequel.
That's pretty funny. Well, did you catch that, like, you know, Efren Ramirez really has a twin brother?
Yes, no, but he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not his twin brother who is in the second movie. It's Efren.
No, and his twin brother is actually, is Carlos, who's really cool, and he's also a bit of an actor. And how fucked is it that, like...
You didn't cast?
You can't get cast as your own twin brother, as the role of your twin brother.
And by the way...
That's kind of too bad. Yeah. Sorry, Carlos.
And you took Efren, who is
He's been waiting so long for that apology.
Yeah.
He's going to listen to this and be like, thank you!
Finally! Said it!
Thank you,
Brian. But Carlos is in Crank 1. Did you notice?
No, is he in Crank 1?
So, no, when they're dancing in the club. You know, so Kayla says, yeah, I was dancing last night, shows the shots of the club. It's him and his twin brother dancing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I thought that was an editing thing.
No, it's actually him and his twin brother. So then in the second movie, when the twin comes in and he says, my name's Venus, I'm from Hollywood, and you realize it's his brother.
Yeah.
Then we flash back to the shots of the two of them, like, getting dressed in the bathroom. That's him and his brother.
Oh, that's crazy.
Wow. Okay. And we just happen to have that because, and that was just like a random thing. You know, we knew we were going to have Kayla in the freaky club. He was like, well, you know, my brother, I have a twin. And we were like, really? Well, bring him. So we shot this stuff. Then in the second movie, when it was like, well, he's dead, but we should bring him back. Okay, let's use the twin brother. Oh, fuck, we have footage of the two of them.
That's crazy.
And by the way, he bulked up. Like, he became like this badass. It's like,
oh, he'll be so happy you said that.
Yeah, because like he's with shirt as I mean, he's Pedro and, you know, Napoleon Dynamite. And then he comes out and he's using like with nunchucks. And he's
got some
like
mad
badass
nunchuck skills.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
How about Clifton Collins in that movie? You guys didn't talk about him.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't. He was amazing. That dude is fucking great in everything.
Elhuron.
He's amazing.
Yeah. You know what?
Watch it.
He was good. I love that dude.
You need to get get Machete involved in a Crank movie.
Danny Trejo?
Clifton Collins, though, he's great. I mean,
maybe
everyone.
He's the fifth Verona brother.
That'd be great.
I also love Verona's head in the fish tank.
Yeah.
I not enough time could even be spent on that head in the fish tank saying, fuck you, and the water coming out of it like he's underwater. It's.
And, could use a few mints.
And then he kicks his head like a soccer ball into the ocean. I also just love the fact that the criminal's compound is on Catalina. most thing. Catalina's so, like, whatever. And it's like, I love that that's where the big lair is in Catalina. Oh, man. It,
Did you guys talk about, like, the girls around the pool who all had the shit kicked out of them?
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. Well, we talked about also the gardener who is still gardening during the middle of a full-on gunfight. Yeah. Like,
doing the dance of death in slow-mo. Well, okay, and then that was, I don't know, you're probably out of time.
No, we have
nothing but time. Yeah.
But that was like, we knew we were going to have Bai Ling come out with the Akimbo, like, mini Uzis or whatever, jumping over the side of the wall. And I was standing, like, right, like, 2 feet away from her, you know, right with the crotch view there,
right,
shooting, and I was really afraid because those guns are shooting blanks, but at close range,
she's
completely insane. So we're like, there's two things we don't want you to do: don't cross the two guns over,
right,
and don't point them at me. You know, just don't do either of those things. So action! She jumps over. She crosses the guns over. She points directly at me. Oh. She just starts spraying all over, just screaming. And then, you know, because it's obvious when you look at her shooting that she's insane and, like, none of her bullets could possibly be hitting anything.
Yeah.
So we thought, wouldn't it be funny?
Oh, my God.
You know, if she hits nobody, none of the bad guys, but just randomly a gardener.
Yeah.
And then we got Leo Ibanez, who was, like, one of our grips. You know, we basically looked around and said, which one of you motherfuckers look most like a gardener? Leo, come here. And so we suited him up and shot him in slow motion, you know,
that's
Chuck Norris style,
awesome.
Doing the dance of death.
It's so great. And does anyone ever get hurt on your movies? I mean,
there's usually some little action that goes on. We always use if stunt guys get hurt, we always use that take in the movie.
Yeah, that's the one.
We promised them that,
well,
actually.
We did a thing in Human Giant where a guy got hit by a car and he took it the wrong way, but the hit looked amazing. And he came up to us afterwards like, please use that one.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, you got to use that one.
We feel we owe it to them.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really like anytime somebody breaks something or whatever. And in Ghost Rider, there's a sick one. Sick one. Our buddy Stewart went out of a truck in Ghost Rider and his leg snaps at this insane angle. And if you freeze frame it, you'll cringe. So, of course, we use that one in the movie.
Oh, that's great.
Who inspires you guys right now? Because I think that you guys are inspiring other people. I hear people talk about it all the time. Like, is there anybody that you're, like, looking out for, movies that you've seen that you've been like, oh, I like that, or?
I don't know. There's a lot of cool movies. Yeah, I wish I had a quick answer for that.
No, man.
But I don't.
Yeah. All right.
But there's a lot of great guys.
And then
what did you see lately you liked?
What did I see lately?
Attack the Block.
Attack the Block I thought was awesome.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic.
A great movie. I mean, and that's another movie that's done for, like, low budget, and it looked great. It's like there's something about that that doesn't feel, like, even the monster is, like, not totally CGI.
It's not CGI at all.
It's not, yeah. It's just, like, it's that furry
suit. Did you know that?
I thought they did,
did
like,
you know
a little,
that?
I thought it was, I know it's a gorilla suit.
Yeah, no, it's so that's real performers
in the suit.
All they did was they just color corrected it, darkened it down to pure black. That's amazing, and I didn't know that watching the movie.
That's crazy.
I didn't know
I
it
didn't
until
know
I
that
heard
either.
The director talk about it, and he was like, "But yeah, that looks so badass.
Yeah.
It looks
that
so good."
Great.
Yeah, so that's a movie that lately I've been.
I really dug that.
Yeah,
it's also another movie that makes you realize like you can do a lot with very little in a way that is really compelling and really it feels more visceral. I had a very visceral reaction to that movie. I was like, I'm into this in a way that I'm like so not into a lot of stuff now that has so much CG, that has so much distance between the people in the movie and the things that they're supposed to be dealing with.
Yeah, and the performances are so good too. You know, it's really nice seeing movies where you don't know who anybody is.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah.
Now,
post Ghost Rider, do you know what you guys are doing?
No.
Crank 3 through 10?
No, yeah, well, yeah. But no, I have no clue at all. We just finished the movie last week.
Oh, okay.
So it's locked, and now do you have to go on? You're going to be going on tours to promote it. We'll definitely talk about it on this show, I'm sure.
Will you come back and bring Nick Cage?
I'd like to.
This has been so great to talk to you, and like I said, we are tremendous, tremendous fans.
I had a question, actually. How did you wind up with Mike Patton doing music?
Oh, because he's awesome.
Because he's fucking awesome.
He's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. Like, are you like, is he somebody you know, or are you just like?
No, we didn't know him. But I was a big fan.
Yeah.
And thought he'd be perfect. I mean, obviously,
so
like,
good.
His ADD, kind of like super eclectic, insane kind of approach to music seems very crank-like.
Yeah. And, but also, like, his stuff, like the Fantomas stuff, or like, there's stuff he does that is so cinematic and that is so interesting.
Well, he loves movies.
Yeah.
And you know, I was hoping that he would be a Crank fan. When we got in touch with him, turns out he was.
That's awesome.
I read a thing that he said when he watched Crank, he watched it like 5 times in a row, and he was like, I got it. I'm obsessed with it. And the music is great. Like, I mean, that's the one thing about these movies, too. It's like the editing, the music, the acting. It's like, it all really, it's this real cohesive madness. And I feel like sometimes you'll see a movie where it's like, oh, that one element was good and this is kind of good, but this is like the first time we're like, oh, I'm thoroughly on board and I can watch it and it's rewatchable, it's fun, it's like I love showing it to people because it's like no one can possibly imagine what they'll be in for.
I love that movie. I mean, really, like Crank 2 is my favorite thing we've done, and so, you know, it was really fun hearing you guys talk about it. And
yeah,
well, we are fans, and this is one guy, I just think this is worthy to bring up. One guy, he calls himself My Human Intentions. He goes, I have always read Crank as a metaphor for the college experience. He starts out pounding energy drinks, then begins experimenting with harder drugs, moves on to some run-ins with authority, gets in fights, deals with annoying people at the dorms where he lives in his first semester with a steady girlfriend, and crashes several parties, followed up with a scene approaching rape, answering the phone during sex, having sex in public, getting a blowjob in a car during a chase shootout / multitasking. It's because all the makings of a typical first-year collegiate activity. Was any of this metaphor I'm seeing intentional?
Yeah, he decoded the movie. It's wow. Exactly right.
Oh, yeah. That guy figured it out.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, for coming in talking about Crank. We're excited for Ghost Rider, which comes out February...
17th.
17th. Well, we will be there first showing, I am sure. And a special thanks to Zach Kreiner from Buffalo, New York, who donated to Earwolf. The studio for a day. Thank you so much for your kind and generous donation, Zach. You are a fan of Earwolf, and we appreciate that so much. Check out earwolf.com. There's a bunch of great stuff on there. Great new shows. Gelmania on Earwolf. Definitely check that out. And, of course, Affirmation Nation with Bob Duca 3 times a week now. And just a reminder, if you haven't bought a How Did This Get Made shirt, get one! Ridiculous Cage t-shirts. Show your support for the show and Nicolas Cage movies by buying a t-shirt on earwolf.com. That's all the time we have for now. See you next time on How Did This Get Made.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. The wolf dead.
This February, true legends from the worlds of comedy and music will unite to form the Supergroup. I'm Tawny Newsom. On every episode, me and my co-host, Alex Kleiner, will invite our talented friends to write and record an original song with us over the course of a week.
You'll hear every step of the process, from writing and rewriting to recording and mixing. Songs with Open Mike Eagle, Paul F. Tompkins, Ted Leo, Woo! Sashir Zameda, Janet Woo! Varney, and more.
The Supergroup. Join the band February 6th on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.